Welcome to Loud and Clear, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of women in music. I'm your host, Olivia Adams, and welcome to our series called YXE Divas, the artistic voices behind the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra's upcoming show. As part of this series, I'm interviewing each of the solo artists featured in this show, and we're releasing episodes as a lead up to the big event. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to chat with Katya Kartova. Katerina Kartova is a Canadian-Ukrainian soprano. She is a graduate of the Glenn Gould School of Music in Toronto and a proud alumna of the music department at the University of Saskatchewan, where she studied with Dr. Gary Gable and Kathleen Lorenz Gable. Katerina is a passionate performer of Ukrainian art songs through the Ukrainian Art Song Project in Toronto, which helps her to stay strongly connected to her roots. One of her most proud moments was singing the soprano solo with the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra in Larissa Kuzmenko's Golden Harvest in 2017. Her most recent achievement was joining the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra office team as their philanthropy and engagement specialist. She is happy to continue performing and working in her Canadian home city of Saskatoon. Welcome, Katya. I'm so excited to chat with you. How are you doing?
Hi, Olivia. I'm doing fantastic. So happy to be here as well.
Well, I like to start all of my interviews off with the same question, and that is, what led you down the path of wanting to become a musician?
Oh dear. I don't think there was a specific moment when I've realized that I wanted to be a musician, but I think that everything that happened to me in life kind of led me to the moment where I am today. So I'm coming from Ukraine, and music was always a big part of what we did. Mm-hmm. We would gather with family around the dinner table, and afterwards we would sing together. My dad always played guitar and we always sung to it. When I was growing up, I spent a lot of time in Russia with my grandparents, and my grandpa used to teach me my first songs. He used to sing all the time, just around the house, and he would try to teach me. And I like telling a story that he would tell people that a bear stepped on my ears and I would never sing in my life. That's a true story. Well, I think you'd be really surprised today. And I'm really happy. And musical education in Ukraine at the time when I was there was quite expensive. And I went to music school, but something like private voice lessons wasn't something my parents could afford. So when I was about 14, I joined an amateur group, a folk theater in Ukraine called Gerdan, who actually had just their Canadian tour. And I believe they finished that just a couple of days ago in Toronto. And yes, I met them all these years later again here in Saskatoon just a couple of weeks ago. It felt quite surreal. But anyway, so I'm 14. I'm joining this group. And I realized just how much I love theater and singing with other people and kind of the kind of joy that it brings me that I couldn't find anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm about 18, I'm moving to Canada. And I remember my parents were asking me questions. So you're of age when you have to decide what you want to do with your higher education. And I said, well, I want to try music. I think I can finally make my own money. I can start taking lessons. I can do all these things. And part of being Canadian is having chances to do things that, judgment-free. I feel like in post-Soviet countries, at least, there's that stigma that you're of a certain age where you can no longer pursue something. And I never felt that here. So what a blessing. And fast forward, I meet teachers. I meet people who agree to give me voice lessons. If they believe in me, they're very complimentary. They're very encouraging. And I joined Saskatoon Opera Chorus. I start taking lessons with Anastasia Winterhalt and later with Gary Gable, and then start taking coachings with his wife, Kathy Gable, who I'm still with all these years later. And yes, kind of classical music wasn't something I was really into right from the beginning. But once you try it, it really sucks you in. Mm. It really does. And I was exposed to all this music of Bach and Handel and Mozart and Tchaikovsky. And to me, there is no way back. It's one of the greatest ways, one of very few ways in which you can touch the past, feel the past, get into the minds of people who lived before you and feel the world through that perspective. It's a true privilege. And not only as a listener, but as a singer, to have a chance for my body, which is ultimately my instrument, to experience that. That's kind of it.
That is so beautifully put. As a way that we can touch the past. Yeah. Well, you recently won the Gordon C. Wallace Opera Competition. Congratulations on that. And I wondered if you could let us in more about that experience and what that was like for you and what it meant to you.
Thank you. Well, it was, again, pretty surreal for many reasons. It wasn't my first time trying to win that competition. Well, I've entered the competition a few times before, and I kind of believe in timing of things. Mm-hmm. And where I am today vocally, mentally, is a great place to be able to win the prize and use it wisely. Competitions is a hard thing in general, especially for me, because I'm not a competitive person. I'm in this business in the arts because of the love of working with other people, other singers. And here I am competing with them. We're all of different age, different paths in our lives, different voice types. We're not a competition to each other in real time. And I always say that competitions do not define us. It's just another chance to test where you're at, mm-hmm. to see where your stamina is, kind of perform a bit under pressure, but as well get great feedback from the invited adjudicators. And again, to have a joy of meeting your colleagues around the province, see your friends again. So that is the huge benefit of the competition for me. And this time around, it was a phenomenal experience because I've tried many times. I worked really hard and I think I've done well. I believe I've done well. So it's a great feeling to walk away from any competition and know that you have deserved it. You have done well and it's not just a fluke. So yeah, it feels really rewarding. But at the same time, I met new people and I look forward to perhaps have them as my colleagues, stage colleagues, sometimes in the near future.
Competitions are an interesting thing because on one hand, these are, yes, your competitors, but also the colleagues that you're going to be interacting with the rest of your life. I remember sitting in, and it wasn't a competition, but it was like a music intensive. And the staff at the front said, look around this theater. These are the people you're going to bump shoulders with. Mm-hmm. And you know, encounter for the rest of your life. These are your colleagues. And I think that it's so important, especially in music, when we do a lot of solo work. I mean, a lot of music is entrepreneurial work and contracts. It can feel very isolating because we don't have like a set of colleagues that we see every day at work, right? Our work is often individual and it's contract work. And so I think it's really important to build on those friendships and to see them as colleagues and not just as competitors, right? As you were saying.
We're truly nothing without each other. If I had to spend the rest of my life singing only the art songs in front of a grand piano, I think it would be a very lonely place for me. Mm. It's just one of many amazing aspects, but it's my colleagues. And not just that, people who create all that magic, including the stage managers and people who create sets and makeup artists and costume artists. Those are the people who help me to execute the character at the end of the day and do my best. Just like that saying, nobody achieves anything alone. It's very much true to the opera world.
You said cradle the experience. I love that. Like what a unique way of putting it, that you're so poetic, Katya. Let's talk more about the opera. What is it like to prepare for an opera and take on different roles and different characters? And what do you do beyond just learning the music? Because the music is obviously just one aspect of the opera. How do you prepare for those roles?
That's truly an amazing question. And I think the answer will be always different depending who you talk to. But of course, they're fundamentals. They would all go through. First of all, I want to be honest with our listener. I am a singer. I'm not what I would consider professional opera singer. Just yet, I'm on my path. I've done a fair share of roles, but most of them were related to school productions. And that's what I can really honestly speak about. Like you said, learning your music, learning fundamentals of that, understanding the score and what composers wanted to convey before you start turning on your own ego and your own visions. We're all full of that. We all have opinions. But one of the most humbling moments in musician's life is just kind of step away from that, from your own ego, and look at what Mozart wanted to tell, right? Mm-hmm. Hear their story and the librettist, and then start build on that, because we are the executors of that. And of course, nobody wants to do anything the same. Otherwise, it'd be boring. We all have to add to it our own experiences, our own thoughts and feelings. And that's the beauty of it. And when it comes to preparing a role, I always try to keep an open mind in a sense that I don't come to anything from a judgmental perspective or like, oh, I don't like this maybe type of music or this character or the storyline. I never think that way. I want to see where it takes me. on what kind of journey. And one of the kind of silly but great examples is when I was in Glenn Gould School of Music, we did one of the small one-act operas by Boguslav Martinů, a Czech composer, The Tears of the Knife. It's quite silly. There's three characters. The opera makes no sense. I'm just a girl who falls in love with a hanged man in the park. And it just builds on that. It was ridiculous. At first, I was like, the music is just strange and the characters make no sense. And how would they even stage it? My God, I think it was one of the best experiences of my life because of the journey. And it's unbiased. So that's another thing. If I performed Pramina, there's definitely a standard. And mm-hmm. a lot of great voices before me and now have sung it and are singing it now. So there is a bit of fear there to match that standard, which is also cool. But something like the Martinus opera, I could just have my own spin on it
and really
have so much fun and make complete sense of it in my own way. And at the end of the opera, I was dancing with this dead body covered in blood. Where else would you do that? So that was quite fascinating. Another one was actually during my summer school with Opera Nuova, and we did The Cunning Little Vixen. I had a tiny role of Rooster one year. You would say it's tiny, but again, there's no gown involved. There's no hot tenor singing along with me. I'm literally a rooster. I had to learn how to walk like a rooster, sing like a rooster while maintaining my soprano qualities. Bunch of like freaked out chickens around me. And again, I had a blast. So I just like, those aren't the things people often think about when they think about opera singers. It's all about glam and gowns and jewels. Yeah. Well, no, sometimes you do little silly things like that, and they make most memorable moments, and they teach you so much about your own acting. And
sometimes you're in a gown and sometimes you're a rooster, right?
100%. Never a dull moment. So whatever it is, yes to the opportunity. And obviously, if I had to sing a phone book, I would make the most out of it.
Do you have a favorite role or character to play, like a style of character?
I'm very open-minded when it comes to that. I like the journey. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily the destination. That's just a cherry on top of the cake. If I were to talk about one of my dream roles, that would definitely be Handel's Cleopatra, even though I'm not sure it's even my voice type, but a girl can dream.
But you can dream, right? If you can do anything. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And another one is, for sure, Tatiana from Eugene Onegin. That opera makes me cry, that music from top to bottom. It's just it's a flood of emotions, various ones, and I absolutely love it. And I think as a character, I really get her. I really get Tatiana. I really love this opera. Lyrics, music, storyline, Tatiana as a character. Yes, everything about it is just something I would truly love to execute one day.
Awesome. Well, I wonder if we can talk of the flip side of your singing, which is, I shouldn't say flip side, but your dedication to art song, which I'm wondering for our listeners, before we jump into talking about the Ukrainian Art Song Project, can you describe what the difference between art song and opera can be?
Well, the simplest way for those who probably listen and quite unsure what that is. So opera is a theatrical act along with music and multiple characters and sets. And so songs from the opera are called arias. Art song are just classical songs. They do not have, it's like the pop song of the past.
Right, yes.
Talk about Germany, France, Russia, they all have their own styles. I don't have anything profound to say. I'm on a journey to rediscover what that really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in music in particular, we get really caught up in semantics of what this is and what it isn't. I know in the sort of conversation that happens in piano is, oh, well, that's pop music. Like any sort of syncopation is now it's pop music and it's not classical music. I'm like, well, who really narrowly defined classical music? Well, historically, dead white men. Right. And so there is differentiation. And at the same time, there's so much crossover that it's not as siloed as we think it is.
It really is. For sure. In art song, you do not have other colleagues with you on stage. It's just so much more intimate. The preferably grand piano partner, I don't want to call them accompanists, which is truly a partnership work between pianists. It's a collaborative work, which is so much more intimate and interesting in the sense that there's really nothing to hide behind an art song.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a very limited amount of time to really tell people a story. And what happened beyond that, because we weren't given clear explanation as to where the character is coming from, where they live, what their previous experience is, what their heartbreak is over. That's all kind of is left behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And it's just a true moment in time where you get to convey what you're experiencing, be that love for nature and your homeland, a heartbreak, and some romantic setting. Yes, and art song is actually, in a sense, if I were to do a recital in art songs, it's, in my world, much harder to do than to sing an opera role, because there's truly nothing to hide behind. Mm-hmm. You feel quite truly naked on stage. You have to really expose what's there in your heart and mind. And it's a very vulnerable place to be in, which is another beauty of being a singer. It's a very unique way to experience yourself and who you are in front of an audience.
Yeah.
Wow. That's intimidating. Opera is great. Opera is like I've said, I just came back from New York and I went to see Matt's production of Turandot. Like, and that was my first Metropolitan Opera experience. I don't think there's anything more elaborate than that.
Right.
People on stage, the sets, the colors, the shimmer, the gold, the costumes, grand music, full orchestra, and it hugs you and it gives you a sense of comfort, given that you're truly prepared for it. Art song is different. Art song is way too exposed for me, but you don't have appreciation for one without experiencing the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, you're quite involved with the Ukrainian Art Song Project. Like you said, you grew up in Ukraine and you immigrated as an adult. And I wondered if you could talk about how you got involved in the Ukrainian Art Song Project and what you do as a part of that.
Yes. So actually a friend of mine, Sofia Mitzik from Saskatoon, mm-hmm. pianist, she told me that a project like that even exists. And at that time, I was already living in Toronto. I was going to school there. And the Summer Institute was happening just right at the conservatory where I was studying, just in month of August. I auditioned, I got in, and that's how my journey started. So I met a gentleman named Pavlo Hunka, who's a fascinating man from Britain. He has a Ukrainian background. And that was his lifelong work, life legacy, to collect Ukrainian art pieces into anthologies. So we're actually able to go to the libraries and grab a book with songs of a certain specific composer or style or time or era and learn them and perform them, which, because of quite a complex history of my home country, that was lost and unavailable to us,
mm-hmm.
which is quite sad, because there is now we see a phenomenal amount of mm-hmm. incredibly beautiful music. So I always say, if not me, then who? And I realize that it sounds a little egocentric, but it is true. If me, Ukrainian born and raised girl, a soprano, is not pursuing that path in her career where she explores Ukrainian art song and performs it to the public, then I cannot really expect it from anybody else. So that slowly becomes my life legacy. Mm-hmm. And I'm using this grand word and I'm only starting, but I really hope that that's where it's going to take me. So since I've done Ukrainian Art Song Institute already twice, and again, it's people that I've met, connections that I've made, experiences that I've had. I just had this thought, and I often think about it, me starting back at home with an amateur Ukrainian folk theater, singing Ukrainian folk songs, which I loved deeply. Now I'm just connecting the dots and see how that just brought me to Ukrainian classical music, which I sang with the same mindset and heart and feelings and sensitivities as I did singing Ukrainian folk songs. And that makes me very, very happy. It truly brings me a lot of joy. And recently I had a recital in November with a friend of mine, Rachel Miller from Toronto, a mezzo-soprano, who was like, I come in to visit you. I'm like, well, then we're going to sing. We're not just going to hang out. We're going to do a concert. And we did. And it was so incredible to see people in the audience who would come up to me after and said, thank you for doing this for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many Ukrainian people in Saskatoon and Saskatchewan
yeah.
who truly need it, especially today.
Mm-hmm.
And we've highlighted songs of some rather modern composers, including one of the living composers, Miroslav Volinsky, who I was directly in touch with, who afterwards sent me a whole bunch of his new songs that haven't been published yet. And his message stated, he's like, I'm not sure how safe they are here, and I would like you to have the copies. Mm-hmm. So one day you can just pass it on and
wow.
matters. It really matters.
You know, I was talking with Fallon Baptiste, who is a Cree singer, and she sings a lot in Cree language. And we were talking about how songs are a way of language preservation. And I really feel that that is the same for what you're talking about with the Ukrainian Art Song Project, that it is a form of preservation. And I think hearing that story of a composer saying, I don't know how safe they are here. I want you to have them so that they can get passed on. That is a form of language preservation.
Exactly. And I mean, there's no better way to put it. And the reason we need to preserve it is because, speaking from my personal experiences, no matter what I do in life, where I'm heading, what my end goals are, I always need to remember where I'm from, because when life gets hard, going back to my roots is what gives me strength. And I think it's true to absolutely everyone. And there is something about your individual, your culture, whatever that might be, is what gives you meaning and sense and groundness in such a hectic world. So staying connected with your culture, your language, your roots is, it's the only way to survive our human race. That's my true belief. So yeah. We have to embrace each other while embracing where we're coming from and what we do, especially in Canada. What a beautiful place to live in these days.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing you talk about that project. And I wonder, did you find that in your education, were you able to sing in Ukrainian? Because typically we have the romantic languages that get pushed as requirements for vocalists. And I have friends who've very much advocated for their own language to be a part of their educational curriculum. And I'm wondering if you found that you were able to do that, sing Ukrainian music all the way through your education.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And maybe I'm just very fortunate. I can speak from my experience in the schools and teachers I've studied with. They've always been very supportive.
Yeah.
In fact, when I've just started taking voice lessons, I've done them with Anastasia Winterhall here in town. And because I was already 19, being just newly immigrated kid, sort of in a new country, barely speaking language, one of the first songs she's given me was actually in Russian, Rachmaninoff. And I know it so falls into category of like standard classical repertoire, but it was such an easy transition into this realm of classical singing, which I'm extremely grateful for.
Yeah.
And later on, I really wanted to find Ukrainian songs, and I couldn't. That wasn't until I was exposed to Ukrainian Art Song Institute, where there's a whole library, and my mind was just blown away because I literally had no idea where to even start. I tried emailing a couple of people back in Ukraine, but I think they had same struggle. It was very much Ukrainian folk music, not a lot of classical stuff that I could have access to. And absolutely, all throughout my bachelor degree and later at the conservatory, pretty much every recital, I had some Ukrainian art song inserted there. And during pandemic, Saskatoon Opera invited me to do a Ukrainian art song recital with Sofia Mitsek, which was incredibly meaningful. Just the fact that I could do it, and I had now amazing pieces to present to the world and my community, and I will continue doing that. So definitely, if you have a chance to do research, again, whichever country and culture you're from, and if classical music is something that, just like in Ukraine, was a struggle to preserve, now we have means and abilities. And if not, compose, create, highlight your background, your language, share it with the world. As much as I love Schubert, that's not the center of the world. There are other things.
Yeah,
no offense to anyone.
There is something just so special about being able to connect with a composer that shares a background with you. I wrote about it in the introduction of both my thesis when I did my master's and also the introduction of my book, Loud and Clear. It was like the moment I got to connect with an Asian Canadian composer. That was it for me. It was like, oh, there's somebody else, and reading her stories. And it was like, oh, I connect with this. I understand this sort of mixed culture that happens. And it's a beautiful thing. And so to be able to connect with somebody that shares that, it brings just this different layer to your music making. And I was able to connect with music in a way that I had never been able to connect with before.
Absolutely. It, representation matters.
Absolutely.
That brings us back to that. And as we talked in our private conversation, going last week to New York and meeting Oksana Liniv, a Ukrainian conductor, and having a chance to have a rather private conversation with her about her career and journey. It seems like anything is possible after that. It seems like up until now, I haven't lived and haven't really realized my potential. And it's all because I met someone from my own culture, and I strictly asked her. I was like, little Oksana from Ukraine, post-Soviet country, how did you get to where you are today performing at the Met? What was that journey like? And she shared it, and it was truly mesmerizing. And now it's like, wow, then maybe I can do it. Maybe I can do something greater. I can dream all of a sudden. So yes, connect with those who you think will help you highlight your true self.
Absolutely. Well, you have an upcoming concert with the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra, which is why I asked you to come on the podcast. And I wonder if you could talk with us a little bit more about the program, what the audience can look forward to. Can you tell us what you're going to sing?
Yes. So first of all, I'm really excited to meet all the artists, because I kind of live in my own little opera bubble. And the beautiful part of it is that there's going to be women representing all sorts of different types of music. We're all related to Saskatchewan, or call it home. We used to at some point of our lives. And to be able to share stage with those fantastic women is a great sense of pride. The fact that I'm a part of that group, again, it's pretty surreal to me. So that's why I'm excited to participate. Why you guys should come is exactly that, because A, there is a variety of various types of music. So don't be afraid if opera is not your thing.
There's something for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I think Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra doing such a phenomenal job, basically satisfying all sorts of tastes. Yeah. I will be performing A Song to the Moon from Dvořák's Rusalka. I'm so thrilled to do that. Actually, that was one of my pieces for Gordon Wallace competition. And now I get to sing it with the orchestra. I'm over the moon, because also Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra was the first orchestra I ever performed with back in 2016 with Larisa Kuzmenko's Golden Harvest. And today, for those who don't know, I'm also working with the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra. We're from the office part, but those people on that stage are my colleagues and friends. People in the audience will be my friends and family and people I know. I don't think there'll ever be a greater space for me to perform to, filled with those I love.
Yeah.
I know that everyone will be cheering up for me, and it will be just a true celebration of arts in our community. So please do come. And also there'll be a duet with another phenomenal singer in our city, Madison McLean. I know she was one of your guests on the podcast. Like, well, then you know, the prayer. It's a staple. So everyone knows that. So somewhere in your heart, you feel like singing along a little bit, please do.
Lovely.
It's that kind of moment where I hope we'll all feel united through art.
Yeah. What is it like to get to perform with your hometown orchestra? I know that you've done this before when you sang the Golden Harvest, but what is that sort of experience like when you're like, these are my people? You know, this is your hometown orchestra.
It's home. It gives you a sense of comfort and feels like it's a space free of judgment. It's a place where I can truly create, be myself, not question much about how it, because it's easy to get into that mentality of how I should present myself to the world when I'm on stage, and how I should speak and look, and what people will think of me. Well, people know me here. I know people, and it is home. It's comforting and great, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. Just be myself and celebrate my achievements.
Yes, as you should. Much to celebrate. Well, it's just been a pleasure getting to chat with you. I always feel so lucky when we get to hop on a Zoom call. We're going to wrap our chat up with a few rapid fire questions. No wrong answers. Just go with your gut. What is your desert island album?
Oh my goodness. Is anybody still listening to like full albums? Because I feel like I have a bunch of individual songs.
I am.
That's a hard question. That really is. Desert Island. You know what? As hard as it is to choose, I think I would take an album by an American Ukrainian soprano, Kvitka Cisik. She has done an enormous favor input into Ukrainian culture through her creating her albums. I believe she hired even New York Philharmonic. She paid her own money for it just to create something that didn't exist before. Mm. She was Grammy nominated for it. But if I were alone in Desert Island, I think it kind of throws us back to what I've mentioned about remembering where you're from, connecting to your roots, your language, which no matter what you're facing in life will give you strength to get through it. So that would be Kvitka Cisik. Yes.
Amazing. Do you have a pre-performance ritual and what is it?
Well, I do like booking my entire day off just so I can fully merge myself into character, make sure that I'm dressed comfortably. There's nothing that bothers me about my looks, that it's all just well contained, well together. When I'm particularly nervous, and I used to do that more before, a night before and a day off, I would just write out a scenario of what I think that evening will look like. From how I feel, how I walk on the stage, who I greet, who I smile to. I just kind of live through that moment, which gives me a lot of sense of comfort. So when I'm there, it's like already been there. I've been here. Yeah. I saw these people. I worked through this aisle. I walked up these stairs. That's given that I know what the hall looks like, which I also try to do before I go on. Yes. Other than that, just be quiet. Be quiet and let your art speak to you so you have something to convey to the audience later that night.
Yeah, that's great. If you could give one piece of musical advice to a fellow musician out there, what would it be?
Enjoy your journey. Know that that destination you've made up in your mind is may not be where you want to be in the end. Just trust that life takes you where you need to be and always do your best. Whatever performance that it is, no matter how little or small, do your absolute best, because that attitude will take you some phenomenal places.
Well, Katya, thanks for coming on Loud and Clear. Do you mind letting our audience know where they can find you? And I'll make sure to link to it in the show notes so that we can follow along in your musical journey.
Thank you. I'm working on my website. So once it's up and running, I will let you know.
But there are
definitely
good.
Some things on YouTube, quite a bit. If you type in actually Katarina Hartova, it's my like stage name.
Yeah, your full name, yes.
Yes, so you can definitely find some good recording, great quality recordings there. You can follow me on Instagram, Katarina Hartova. I occasionally post there. And yes, that's about it.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
And that is a wrap on our episode with Katya and this week's installment of the YXE Divas series. Again, it's just been such a pleasure being able to connect with people from my home city and being able to amplify and elevate the homegrown talent Saskatoon has. You are going to want to get your tickets to this event. So it's saskatoonsymphony.org/event/YXE Divas, or even if you type in Saskatoon YXE Divas, you are going to get a link to save your seats and buy some tickets to TCU Place. And also, it will be live streamed. And so if you can't be there in person, there is a recording that will be available, and the live stream is really quite phenomenally done. It's absolutely professional, and I've enjoyed many a concerts from the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra through their concert stream app. So you can check that out. Again, the links are always in the show notes down below, and I will see you back here next week with our next installment. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.